Evil is not confined to a time, a place, or a form. It can lie dormant, only to rise again with a new plan for destruction. We cannot rely on will alone. We must seize any battle, engage any enemy, and defend our home. While evil changes the reasons for war, we change the way we fight.
Welcome to March 3rd on this delightful March 10th or 11th of 2011. I'm Vangelis here with WTF at TFW with a supplemental which I have dubbed WTF at GDC 2011 because Seth was at the GDC. None of us were, just Seth, but I'm calling it WTF at GDC because then it's acronym and acronym, and that's clever. So here with me today, of course, is Seth.
Well, does it really count that I was at GDC if I didn't get to go into the actual, you know, show floor in the Moscone Center?
And well, you could have gotten away with it until you just said that.
Well, yeah, but then if somebody were to ever be like, hey, did you see this obscure indie game?
And you're like, no, I'm too good for it.
Then you just tell them that you're under NDA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Also here, as you can tell, is Gog Dog.
Hi.
And basically, Seth got to go into a hotel room and see a demo by the guys doing the Dark of the Moon game. And we were talking about it a bit before we did the recording, and there's one anecdote I really enjoyed, and I hope I can bring it up, which is about a camera.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
I mean, there's a bunch of people from different outlets in the room to see all the game all at the same time. Like the only person that I had met in any way was a guy from Bitmob and EGM magazine. And he seemed pretty cool. But there were a couple other guys. I never caught where they were from, but they did a video shoot with Sean Miller, the game director. After the demo, and they had a huge, super expensive looking 3D camera.
With two lenses, right? Like two lenses.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, yeah. So somewhere out there, someone decided that when they interviewed a guy in a hotel room, they needed to do it in proper two lens 3D. So.
Yeah. I didn't even realize it was a 3D camera until they were breaking it down and the guy had like turned it to the side to unplug stuff from the back. And I looked up and I'm like, what?
That raises the question is I want to know what journalism outlet on the internet decides that they need to film their interviews in 3D, because that's kind of badass in a certain special way.
Maybe they're planning for the future.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember now. I think On Demand, I think G4 has some 3D content.
Maybe it was them. Like my initial thought was maybe it was, I don't know if PSN Network does its own like video update stuff, but since PlayStation's all about 3D, maybe they film their stuff in 3D. But I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't recognize the guy asking the questions, and he stood off camera the whole time too. So it's not like it was that balding dude.
You should have pulled him aside.
Whatever show.
You should have pulled him aside afterwards and just went like, what do you think? What's all this 3D stuff for? Yeah. This gives me headaches.
What are you doing, man? What are you doing? You're not helping. You're just jumping on the bandwagon, man. You got to shut this 3D crap down.
My company maybe sells they were, 3D stuff. Yeah,
they were with Nintendo. They're making content for the 3DS, so they're covering they're covering games that aren't even going to be on a Nintendo system.
So you can watch footage of the games in 3D, and it's just like you're playing them.
Yeah, now go buy a PlayStation or an Xbox. Because this game is not on the Wii.
Oh, dear. So aside from that, you and the fellow from EGM, you got to check out some of the Dark of the Moon game. A little bit of a strange way. You mentioned also that when you got there, it wasn't clear exactly what was going on. So you kind of you saw the second two-thirds of the presentation, then saw the first third afterwards.
Yeah, I missed like the first 15 minutes because we were on time, but they started early.
Yeah.
And we thought they were finishing up the previous appointments. So we stood in the hall for like 15 minutes until we were like, this is taking a really long time.
And you got a boy from EGM who can back you up on that one.
Yeah. He had a beard too. Oh. So we were two beards in the hall. Nice. But in the meantime, we got the chat, and it was fun. We talked about EGM coming back, and I was messed up of all the game magazines that that would be the first one to die. So yeah. It's cool that at least
was he
back.
Part of the old guard on that?
No. Or at least I don't think so. I didn't recognize him from the past. But I got the impression that he was a newer person.
I was going to ask if he was from EGM 2. That's a throwback. Everyone who remember EGM 2?
I completely forgot about it until you mentioned it just now.
Bought the first issue of EGM 2, and I thought it was like the super most awesome thing ever when it came out. I don't know where it is anymore.
When was that? I don't even remember that. I subscribed to EGM for years. I don't remember that.
Ages ago. I don't even remember why, but they started up another publication called EGM 2, and I don't even remember what the difference was between the two of them.
Well, that's why they failed the first time. They were paying back all the debt from their second magazine.
If any listeners out there, if you remember EGM 2, please sound off in the thread. I want to know now. The only thing I distinctly remember from EGM 2 is I had an issue of it that had like a multi-page pictorial strategy guide for the arcade version of World Heroes 2 Jet. I mean, that's kind of reaching a little bit, I understand. But anyway, Transformers! Seth, tell us about what you saw.
Okay, well, this is being developed by High Moon Studios, the folks that brought us the pretty good War for Cybertron.
Woo!
But it's not our old friend Matt Teager. It's this guy Sean Miller is the game director, and he seemed equally as nice and friendly and ready to get down as Matt did.
Excellent.
So the plan is this is going to come out just before the movie. And the game is going to be set just before the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to kind of fill the gap in between 2 and 3 and kind of establish some stuff that is just going to be happening in the movie as a matter of fact. You'll see more of how it became that way through the game, is what they're trying to do.
Okay.
So I guess we should probably warn that, you know, going to spoil some stuff from
right.
the game.
Yeah. If you want to go into the game,
spoil
virgin.
Some stuff from the movie.
If you want to go into the game and or Dark of the Moon completely virgin, untouched, then yes, you'll want to turn this off for now until you've seen either or both.
Yeah, so they were not interested at all in talking about War for Cybertron in any way.
Oh, yes, I remember this story.
Yeah, well, in between the two demos, I kind of brought up War for Cybertron, and they're like, we're not even acknowledging that you said that. And and then after the first run of the demo, I asked a question about how much of this game is built on the War for Cybertron engine and framework, because some stuff is really recognizable from War for Cybertron. And they kind of tried to play it off like this had nothing to do with War for Cybertron at all. But one thing I noticed very quickly is, so the first section that they showed had a Bumblebee in it. But the first section I saw, because we came in late, had Ironhide. And so I see Ironhide in vehicle mode, and he's moving like a War for Cybertron vehicle. Like how they had the hover mode.
Yeah.
Where they could kind of slide and strafe. So Ironhide's doing that. But he's not hovering, just his wheels could turn in like every direction. And while he's in that mode, like guns are up out of the front fenders and he's shooting and doing all that stuff.
So it's kind of like Stealth Force mode, sort of.
Not only is it like Stealth Force, it's called Stealth Force.
Oh,
the snap. Name
Stealth Force is in the game.
Boom.
They say Stealth Force.
Yes.
Is there any context to that, or is it referring to that mode?
The setup is humans and Autobots have been working together to develop weapons to fight Decepticons, and Stealth Force is part of that project.
Okay.
Does Peter Cullen say Stealth Force at one point?
Not in the little bit of Optimus Prime dialogue I heard.
Oh, okay.
So, and then when you, like, do the turbo mode, like, from War for Cybertron, so now you're moving fast as a vehicle, then all the weapons and stuff fold back in, and you're just straight normal vehicle.
Okay.
And then it looks like you have special attacks while you're doing that, like how some of the characters had, like, a ramming attack.
Mm-hmm. So is it, like, a second vehicle mode? Like, you have a regular vehicle mode, and then the Stealth Force one?
Well, it's just like War for Cybertron, where when you're moving slow as a vehicle, and you could hover and go in any direction and shoot your guns.
And okay, then when so, when, you so when, go you're going, when you're going slow, you have all the guns and stuff out, but then when you're boosting, it's just you go into regular vehicle mode.
Yeah, okay. All the guns go away and you can't shoot. It's exactly like how it worked in War for Cybertron. So I asked, like, so this is basically the same controls and whatnot as War for Cybertron. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's War for Cybertron. I like.
We're not even mentioning that game. That doesn't exist.
Put our studio on the map. What? Don't know about it.
The specter of PR hanging over the room a dark shadow.
It's like, this is the game we're selling, not the game we already sold. We're only talking about this game today. So, you know, I didn't push it. Like, I got what was happening, and I just let it go.
You're not going to get all hip-hop gamer and get up in their grill and be all like...
No. So, I'll jump back to Bumblebee. So what they show of the Bumblebee level... Oh, and then, unlike War for Cybertron, where you got to choose which of three characters you played as, in this, every level is specific to the character you control in that level.
Hmm.
So, like, this level is Bumblebee because this is relevant to Bumblebee in the story. And they were explaining how that lets them kind of craft the level to take advantage of specific characters more and tell a more specific arc through the story was their idea.
I can see that also because, if I recall right, in War for Cybertron, you selected one of three dudes, but then the other two were also there as your teammates in AI. So I'm guessing this one you don't have teammates all the time.
I didn't see teammates at all in the bits that they showed. And, like, the gameplay segments they showed were all fairly brief, like just a couple minutes.
Hmm.
So with the Bumblebee level, everything they showed, he was outdoors in, like, a South American wilderness kind of, like, kind of rainforest-ish looking, but not, like, dense trees.
No sand. But,
like, lots of cliffs and stuff, and trees on the edges to sort of keep you going down a specific path, sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't really much interesting to see about that. Like, they were basically just showing, like, this is Stealth Force, and this is an outdoor level. Then the Ironhide section they showed next was in Detroit, and Detroit is in ruins. Like, buildings are on fire, stuff smashed up. Clearly there had just been an attack. And in the little bit of a cutscene beforehand, Ironhide is kind of questioning, like, what's even the point? Ooh. And Optimus is on the radio, and he's, like, telling him, like, we have to earn the humans' trust back, and there's still Decepticons around. And so Ironhide's going in to clear out the remaining Decepticons. And as he's walking around, blowing away all these drones, essentially, another voice comes on, different from Prime. He's like, Ironhide, Mixmaster is here. And that's where the demo ends.
Hmm.
So I guess Mixmaster must be the level boss.
That means that the one from the movie was just one of those hundreds of dudes who look kind of like other Constructicons.
I guess.
Or Mixmaster totally survived getting cut in half because he's a badass.
And then, I don't remember, in War for Cybertron, did like score numbers come up on screen as you were getting kills?
Not that I recall.
Okay, well, there's score numbers flashing all over the screen in this game.
Woo! Points!
Yeah.
It's like, so, is it just score or experience?
Translate. They didn't say. And unfortunately, I didn't think to ask when the opportunity came around.
Or was EGM for just, that?
Yeah, points were coming up. And it, like, different numbers of points were happening. It looked like depending on how, like, what weapons were being used or whatever to get the kills. So I don't know if they would bother doing an experience thing if every level you were playing a different character, essentially. So
maybe it's like some kind of in-game currency to buy unlockable stuff. I don't know.
No.
Be odd too.
Let's see. Just skimming through my notes here.
I'm gonna get the high score in Dark of the Moon. None of you guys are gonna have as many points as me.
So you will play as Decepticons,
woo!
But when asked specifically like how the game splits, like is it 50-50? They didn't want to talk about that either. So the next level that they showed was back in a wilderness situation. Looks similar in outdoor terrain as the Bumblebee level. And they were playing a Soundwave.
What?
Who's not a satellite.
What did he do?
We'll find... Huh?
What did he turn into?
Well, the guy was explaining, Mr. Miller, was explaining that... we will see over the course of the game how satellite Soundwave comes down from space and becomes a just sort of silver SUV.
Hmm.
So that was kind of like, oh, that's all.
You didn't get to see it though?
No, we did in the demo, but we didn't get to see Soundwave coming down from space and taking a new form. So he just said you will see it in the game.
Was he primarily silver, or was there any blue involved? Just because I know someone will ask.
Yeah, he was a little bluish, and at the loading screen, the image of Soundwave in robot mode was black and red. But he said, "This is not what he's going to look like. This is a holdover from some earlier art. He's not going to be these colors in the game."
You probably don't remember, but does he resemble that Soundwave SUV concept art we saw back before Revenge of the Fallen?
I don't really remember. I mean, it was a mostly silver car, and you're seeing it from behind.
Okay.
So it was mostly silver with a black rear window. So they showed some of that of Soundwave sort of like fighting Autobots outdoors, and then they go to inside. So this Soundwave level is he's infiltrating this Autobot / human base where they had been developing these weapons. And by infiltrating, he's just blasting his way in and killing everybody.
Infiltration, of course.
Right. And then I'm going to sort of jump out of order of when they showed it, but this is from the same level, apparently. There's another playable character related to Soundwave. You'll get to play as Laserbeak in portions.
Ooh, Did he look like the thing from the trailers?
He looked exactly like the thing from the trailers. It's
totally laser beam.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like you'll get to certain points in the level where, like, there's a force field in the way or something, and Soundwave can't get through, so he deploys Laserbeak. Then you have to fly Laserbeak ahead to deactivate the thing so Soundwave could get to the next area, sort of a deal.
So you play as him as needed and then switch back to Soundwave?
Yeah, that's how it looked.
Okay.
And then, like, when they were going to show that, Sean Miller's like, "No, there's a quick thing we want to show you, but I'm not sure if we're allowed to yet." And then the PR guy's like, "Go ahead, but keep it brief." But it's like, they've been doing this demo all day. Like, is this the first time that they decided to show it? Like,
maybe that was
are they
rehearsed.
Just playing it off? Yeah. Like, we're getting to see something extra special. But, yeah. So you're gonna fly around as Laserbeak, at least a little bit.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and Sean Miller was saying, like, "Oh, this is kind of fun because Laserbeak's so much smaller than the other robots, so you get a little sense of a shift in scale." And you kind of do, but it's not like you're playing a tiny little guy. I mean, Laserbeak's still pretty big. Then they showed a little bit of a Starscream level where he said there would be parts in the level where Starscream would be able to transform, but they only showed Starscream in jet mode at the time. And you were just up in the air. There was nowhere to land if you wanted to transform. So there was a little bit of a cutscene beforehand. There's a big cargo jet flying. A voice is like, "Oh, it's Starscream." And then the back of the cargo jet opens and some generic aerial bots are jumping out and transforming. And like, "Don't worry, Stratosphere. We'll take care of Starscream."
Hey!
Did you see Stratosphere?
He was the cargo jet.
Okay. He didn't transform, though. You just saw him in jet mode?
No, but after Starscream shoots down the aerial bots and then taunts Stratosphere, Stratosphere goes, "Oh, you want a piece of me?" Like, I'm not getting the dialogue right, but it's to the effect.
"You want a piece of me? I'm Stratosphere.
Oh, you want a piece of me?" Starscream, "Stow force engage!" And then all these guns come out of him.
Out of who now?
Stratosphere.
Okay.
Just parts of the jet
force
start.
Engage.
Okay, they've got to use that in the movie. That's the best call out ever. Stealth force engage.
That doesn't sound like stealth, though.
Because you're screaming, "Stealth force engage!" And then all these guns pop out.
And that's
I don't remember if it was engage or activate, but it was.
Stealth
force. This and then things start flipping around, and all of a sudden there's all these guns and missile launchers.
That's the best name for that mode.
But when we got to the question time, one of the other people that were there was like, "Stealthfor seems like a weird name for this."
Little did he know the long history of the Stealth Force toy line, upheld by its few fans.
Yeah, well, I asked. Like, so Stealth Force is a subline of the toys. Is this something Hasbro, like, kind of requested get worked in? And then, like, this is also part of the movie. Because, like, if you've seen the NASCARs with all the guns sticking out of them, that's Stealth Force in the movie. And I'm like, oh, wow. This is going to be weird.
That's the best. Stealth Force.
But hey, Stratosphere's not just a toy anymore.
Yeah, props, because I saw a Stratosphere looking thing in one of those trailers, and I was kind of wondering if maybe he'd get to do something. I hope he still has his crazy, like, duck boots.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't show any more. Like, the guns popped out in Stealth Force, and that was the end of that bit.
"I'm a regular cargo plane!"
And I'm going to activate this to become stealthy.
Make me stealthy! It's stealth because you're killing everything that sees you.
That is. That the best defense is a good offense, right?
Then the next piece of level they showed was a Megatron level. Megatron is still a space tank. They said we will see him change form to what he's going to be in the movie. But Sean Miller didn't want to spoil that. To which I sort of... like, he didn't want to spoil what he turned into. To which I went... And then a dude that was sitting next to me kind of looked at me real quick, like, what's your problem? But and then when I was talking to Sean in between the two demos, I'm like, yeah, when you said you didn't want to spoil what Meg turns into, the Chinese did that for you. That's already been spoiled. And he goes, oh, yeah, I saw the pictures on TFW, and we were all like, oh, man, bummer. Like, that's out now. He goes, but, you know, most of these other people in the demos, they don't have any idea, so it's more for them.
That's kind of what I enjoyed about your perspective on the last one as well for War for Cybertron, was like all the other journalists you encountered were not really hardcore in tune with all the Transformers news as we are. I remember that story about when Matt Tiger was going, like, was it like Starscream has two teammates and they're Thundercracker and Skywarp. Like, it was the greatest thing ever. That was so cool too.
What? Oh no! You gotta be kidding me! So, but back to the Megatron level. Yeah, so he's also rampaging through an Autobot base. I don't know if it's the same one. They didn't give it any context, and you never see him transform. But he has like the big tank tread feet.
Mm-hmm.
He has some special attack where he's like sucking the Energon out of all nearby Autobots, and they sort of shake around in the air until he sucked all the Energon out of them, and then they fall to the ground. And they're like, my circuits are melting.
Wasn't that in didn't War for Cybertron Megatron have something like that where you could suck power?
Yeah, we had the drain ability, which was at the... the scientists had that too in multiplayer, but you activate it, and anything close to you, it just goes bzzz, and it activates for a few seconds and will slowly drain their health, and Megatron's health will go up. So, yeah. They weren't going to mention that because it's War for Cybertron.
Yeah, and then it was kind of weird how he was talking about it, so I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, but it sounds like he was saying that Megatron will have, like, an attack where he can call in hatchlings and they swarm on an enemy.
That's kind of cool. Feed!
But, yeah, they didn't show
it. Feed
my
children.
Yeah, they didn't show it, and how he was describing it was kind of weird, and I was trying to take notes down on something else that had just happened, so I was a little distracted, and so I don't know if I'm getting that right, but they were definitely talking about hatchlings. So
they should totally play that like Half-Life, where you throw the spore pod and all the ant lions come out and just swarm the enemy. He should just carry like hatchling juice and he throws it and hatchlings just crawl out from everywhere and just mutilate dudes.
My question is, where do they go after they're done? Like, do they just despawn or do they like explode? Or
they scamper away, who knows?
We're done
they
feeding.
Didn't show it. Then let's see what else they do. Yeah, then that's when they showed the laser beak thing. They did acknowledge that there will be multiplayer, but they weren't talking about it.
I bet there will be classes, and I bet one of the classes will be a flying medic.
Maybe there'll be an ascension mode, too. Maybe there'll be everything that's in War for Cybertron, just with Earth levels.
And I'll add the word stealth to the front of all of them.
Yeah, so that was pretty much it for what they showed. The graphics look really nice. Like the Detroit City stuff look really good. And then with like the outdoor sort of nature levels, the outdoor city levels, the indoor sort of base levels, it seems to have more visual variety than War for Cybertron did.
Understandably.
Right. So that's good. And then just like the little cutscene with the beginning of the Ironhide part, where Ironhide is transforming and the camera sort of like moving around him, like very Michael Bay-ish, and the camera passes very close to his face. The face looked great. There's nice. Tons of detail. Just tons of detail. So it at least looks good. Mm-hmm. And if the controls are basically the same as War for Cybertron, that played well. So I don't really see why this couldn't be a good movie game.
How was the frame rate? Does it look nice and smooth?
Yeah, from what we saw, it was pretty smooth.
What about weapons? Does it seem to have a fairly diverse amount, or did you really get to see that much?
The HUD on the screen is different than War for Cybertron. So, like, where War for Cybertron, you had, like, your two weapon choices down in the corner. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything like that. And then it could also be that they just haven't implemented all, like, the HUD detail yet. Because I don't think I saw a radar on the screen either.
I was going to ask if it did the Gears of War health, or if it had a health bar, but I'm guessing it didn't have a health bar.
Yeah, maybe they just haven't implemented all the HUD yet, because there was actually very little information on the screen now that I think about it. Starscream flying around had more of a HUD, but that had more like directional sort of indicators.
Did he have a radar while he's flying?
You know, I can't remember now. I was doing a lot of looking up and down as I was typing out notes.
You sound like me during the Hasbro panels at BarCon. Yeah. I'm too busy tweeting everything and I don't actually look at it.
Yeah, it might have been a good idea to have stayed all the way through the second time and just watched more.
And you could have also confirmed if the that thing about the Laserbeak level was just something that they scripted.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know if we can tell you this. And you're like, they can!
I did kind of think about just hanging out, but I had somebody waiting for me, and it would have sucked for them. So I just slid out after the Ironhide part was over. That was definitely repeat. Then we had a chance to ask questions. I kind of went over everything I asked already. Stuff other people asked were just kind of basic. Like, what's your favorite character? Like, that sort of thing.
It must have been really happy to have an actual, like, Transformers site there to ask questions about the game and not about Transformers.
Yeah, and then, like, a bunch of questions that they clearly weren't going to be able to answer. Like, how many playable characters? And who else is playable? And it's like, well, of course they're not going to say any of that yet, because that's just the way it is. But I guess you have to go through the process, and somebody's got to ask.
Yeah.
Then, if you listen to Giant Bomb, and I know you guys do, Jeff Gerstmann has made jokes in the past about how there seems to always be like the one foreign European journalist.
I was about to ask if Eurogamer were the ones who asked about the characters.
I don't know if they were from Eurogamer, but there was a European guy with a thick accent that I wasn't quite able to identify, who was asking very difficult to understand questions
about incredibly simple things. Like,
I'm not even sure.
I was going to ask, will multiplayer have ammo?
So it was kind of like him asking something and then Sean Miller going, "What?" And then him saying it again.
What is forking artistic value of why the pickup truck is doing that?
Yeah, I just sort of tuned him out when that was happening. But like, as soon as the guy asked his first question, I'm like, oh my god, this is actually happening. This is the Gerstmann scenario.
Because when you, like, seriously, when you were talking about the other sites asking questions like who's your favorite Transformer and stuff, the very first thought that popped into my head was Eurogamer, French guy, asking how many players in multiplayer.
Well, if he had asked about multiplayer after they had specifically said there will be multiplayer, but we're not talking about it at all anymore, if he was then like, "Who will tell us about the multiplayer?" then I would have died. I would have fallen over, and I would have died. And it would have been really inappropriate, and we probably wouldn't have been able to talk to them.
You'd have been like, again. "No, seriously." But, so you ever listen to Giant Bomb? They're like, "Get out."
It's like, he's totally that dude. He's that dude. He's like, I like being laughed at. This is very rude.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, that was neat. So that was about the long and short of what I could think of offhand.
I actually wanted to ask you this way back, and I wasn't sure how appropriate a question this is, but did they give you guys any refreshments in the room?
There was a table with like all these weird little pastries and bottles of water and stuff. I didn't take anything.
Too much honor?
Well, we had just come from Japantown, where I had an awesome lunch.
Oh.
And I didn't want to spoil it with like some weird stale pastry.
Activision pastry. That poor pastry probably got laid off after.
Well, the guy operating the 3D camera made sure he went and got something before they left.
Oh, by the way!
So I'm taking one of these with a strawberry on it.
Try to stop me! I got a 3D camera!
Yeah. You know how much those things cost? A lot.
I really want to know who that was now. Maybe they were just filming with one lens or something, and that just happens to be the camera they had that day. But
I don't know. Or they're like planning for the future. I don't know. So I mean, I guess we could kind of talk a little bit about how the reason why you're listening to this now and not sooner to when GDC actually happened is they've put an embargo on it.
Yeah.
So we're recording this a little bit ahead of time.
It's March 3rd where we are, but technically we're not talking about this till March 10th.
Right. And there was some talk back and forth, sort of not involving us, between the PR people and Sean Miller in relation to the embargo. And I guess there's going to be a trailer for the movie that was supposed to be out already, but isn't.
Oh.
So that's part of the reason for the embargo. So probably by the time you're hearing this, there's been a new movie trailer.
By the time you're hearing me and Gog going like, "Laserbeak," you're all going like, "Yeah, Laserbeak. What, are you stupid?"
Stupid. Stupid. It was the laser. It's titled the Laserbeak trailer. Stupid.
Well, we already saw him in one trailer, so.
But everyone thought that he might be something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, I have seen some people say, like, "That can't be Laserbeak. It looks too much like a drag gun." I was like,
"Birds don't have that many feathers."
And nobody looks
dragons
like
have beaks too.
What they do. Yeah.
I love beaked dragons.
And it's like, and, you know, actual panthers have two eyes. And
no. So,
there you go.
He's a jaguar, so, you know, okay?
Jaguars have one eye. I saw it.
So that was part of the reason for the embargo. Another thing that was actually told to me directly when I was being a smartass about it and being like,
"Embargo, Twitter." No, we're going to kill you. Oh.
Like, they're all like, well, you know, it's GDC. We don't want this to just get buried amongst all the other news. And the iPad 2 announcement, because that happened earlier that day. I'm like, yeah, but I'm from a fan site. This is the only thing about GDC we're going to be covering. He's like, yeah, well, but, you know, it's got to be for everyone. It wouldn't be fair. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm just being a dick. So yeah, thanks, Steve Jobs. You're part of this problem.
Steve Jobs and Laserbeak screwing everything up for our podcast coverage of GDC. A bunch of punks.
Punk aces. Then I recorded like the demo while we were there. That's going to be cut down in some manner and attached to this.
I guess we can stick it on after we're done talking here.
Yeah, so you'll get to hear some of how this thing actually goes.
Yeah,
but you're not going to hear the whole thing. I'm going to cut it down.
Was it only audio you recorded?
Yeah.
Basically, what's being cut out is a bunch of gameplay noises, so unfortunately you won't know what the sounds of kabooms are like in the game until you see some footage of it from another outlet, but I think that you'll survive, myself.
So, that's in lieu of actually having been able to do a little interview like I did last year with Matt Teeger, but if everything works out, we may be doing some recording with those guys in the relatively near future.
And that would be pretty cool. If they're as cool as Matt Teeger.
At BotCon.
At, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Assuming everything works out.
I wonder if they're going to do that.
Sounds awesome.
I wonder if they're going to do that thing that Matt Teeger did at BotCon where he's like, did you play the game yet? It's like, no. It's like, did you see the credits yet? No. It's like, let me boot up the credits. I still remember that. I thought that was kind of cute.
Well, they don't have a firm date, so don't even know if it's going to be out in time for BotCon.
Yeah.
Or for Cybertron was.
I was about to say that if we wait till BotCon, then we can give them some post-game-based questioning, but the movie's not out when BotCon's happening, if I have my dates correct.
Do they have a date for the movie yet, just a month?
I thought it was 7/11.
11. Oh, yeah, that's right.
7/11/11.
The poster, yeah. So. Yeah. Well, they did say the game was going to be out just before the movie.
Yeah, it might be. Maybe the preceding month. So maybe we could have that. That would be the best timing, I think, to sit down and actually like record with them. Because if we sit down and record with them before the game's out, it's got some limitations to as far as it can go.
Well, there'll be a lot more that they could talk about by then. Like, all the characters, they'll have announced all the characters.
So what does Megatron turn into? We can't tell you.
By then. Yeah. the movie's still not out yet. Michael Bay will kick our asses. He's actually kind of buff. So we don't want to mess with that guy.
Been working out.
He's clearly a lunatic. There's no telling what he's capable of.
Did they say how closely they were working with the people who are making the movie to make this feel like it is actually really a prequel and not just a licensed video game with those characters in it?
Yeah, they said that there's quite a bit of communication with Paramount, ILM, and Hasbro in the development of the game. But it's not like they have somebody that's on set of the movie and then coming back and then going back to the movie sort of thing.
Mm.
So I'm sure those parties, Hasbro and Paramount specifically, they're making sure that this game represents everything that they want it to. And the ILM involvement is probably like character models and stuff like that.
I was actually going to say
sound effect.
When you mentioned assets. That Ironhide looked really good, that reminded me of the first movie game saying that they had access directly to ILM CG models. So I'm wondering if that's the case on this one as well.
I wouldn't be surprised. And this game looks way better than the last movie game.
Mm.
So I mean, if they didn't have access to the same materials that those people had, then they've done a great job of making up for it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's I mean, if it's on the War for Cybertron engine, as it sounds like it is, at least for the vehicle stuff, then it'll definitely be a worthwhile experience, I'd think, gameplay-wise. That's
well, War for Cybertron used the Unreal Engine for the graphics, didn't it?
Yep. And for well, no, there wasn't. I thought there was ragdolling, but there actually wasn't.
Right. So, I mean, it looks like it's the same, if not the same, then a very similar control scheme, which makes me happy because I like the control scheme in War for Cybertron, and it was just coming in late. We missed the whole Stealth Force explanation at the beginning of the Bumblebee part. So when I see Ironhide sliding around like a War for Cybertron vehicle, I'm like, ah, look at that. Hey, look what he's doing there. This is freaking War for Cybertron with a skin on it.
When you first talked about that and you didn't mention the guns popping out, I was just imagining the Top Kick just kind of like gliding around with its wheels spinning all over the place. And I was like, that sounds kind of ridiculous. But Stealth Force is clearly not ridiculous in any way, so I'm happy that
that turned out. Stealth Force is serious business.
Stealth Force engage!
Just, you have to put that in the title of this.
I'm so happy. I can't begin to describe.
No, that needs to be the episode of this supplemental.
Stealth Force engage.
Dark of the Moon GDC coverage, : Stealth Force engage.
I could make that
because it's stealthy because we're coming out of the embargo and revealing it to everyone, so therefore it's stealthy.
Yes, I could make that the episode description in like font size 23 or something. In the thread.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of it's not really weird, but it's just sort of like, hey. This is the first time I've ever been embargoed on information. This is kind of fun, like, or at least officially.
Yeah.
There's been times where we've been told stuff where it's like, you know, don't tell anybody, but this is the first time where I was given a piece of paper about it.
Ooh, are you going to frame it?
Well, it got kind of wrinkly in my backpack, so.
Damn.
But now, you know, through... You know, transstantiation, you guys are under embargo now too at the time of this recording. How does it feel?
Pumped. I'm already the moment you mentioned Laserbeak, I was like, I can't wait to tweet that. And I was like, oh no, wait, I can't.
Yep. You gotta wait till Thursday.
Oh, I'm gonna be sitting Seven on that days. Gem for a whole week unless tomorrow a trailer comes out called the Laserbeak trailer.
Yeah, well, I get to work this morning, and one of the guys is like, oh, how was that thing? Was it cool? I'm like, yeah, it was pretty cool. He's like, so what's the game? Like, does the game look cool? I'm like, yeah, it looks kind of good, but, you know, it's kind of weird. I'm under embargo. Like, I can't officially say much about it in detail. I mean, I'm sure I could tell you, because, like, you're just a guy that works in a warehouse, but,
Ouch!
But, Well, I'm just a guy that works in a warehouse, too, so...
Yeah, but you're a guy who works in a warehouse under embargo.
Yeah. But I was like... But I'm like, well, I can tell you stuff. He's like, you know, who are you going to tell? But, like, for the podcast I do and the message board that I'm on, like, I can't say anything there because then they might get mad, and then... When next year's GDC comes around and they are showing War for Cybertron, they're going to be like, yeah, you're not invited because you can't keep your stupid mouth shut for 7 days.
That's when you go like, no, it wasn't me. It was the EGM guy. You know, the one with the beard.
He hacked my account on TFW and posted everything.
He seduced all my information out of me in that hallway. And then, damn it, EGM.
He's like Kevin Mitnick. He was social engineering me. He figured out my password by asking me seemingly friendly questions about where I grew up, or my favorite color, or my first pet's name, or all the other things that people tend to use for passwords.
It'd be weird. Like, hey, man, I just met you. So what was your first pet's name?
What was the name of the street you grew up on?
And what's your mother's maiden name? I'm just curious.
What's the last four digits of your social security number? It's like, wow, you're kind of invasive. But yeah, like, I mean, it's just fun kind of getting to do that stuff. So I don't want to screw that up.
No, absolutely. And it's an interesting thing because a lot of people who don't have any kind of in the know always kind of want to like, tell me something that nobody else knows. But once you know something that nobody else knows that you're not supposed to share, then it's actually even more troublesome because then when you encounter discussions, you have to pretend you don't know what you know and then either not participate in the discussion or if you want to participate in it, you have to start playing pretend, which is strange.
But that can be fun.
Yeah, it can.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the things that's kind of neat with this stuff is like the pro game journalist guys, like they sit there quietly for the demo. They ask their kind of basic questions and then they're gone because they got other stuff to do. And I'm like, no, this is neat. Let me ask you detailed questions that nobody else you probably talk to or even going to think of that you can't answer anyway, but but at least give you a chance to stretch your legs on something a little more difficult kind of question. And it was cool that, like, when this Sean Miller dude, like, asked me who I was because me and the EGM guy came in late, so we didn't get to introduce ourselves. When I said, oh, I'm with this fan site, TFW, he's like, oh, yeah, I know TFW. We check there periodically. We check out the news. We see what you guys say about stuff and kind of see what's going on. It's like, oh, rad.
Yeah.
He goes, so you're just part of the staff there? I'm like, well, I'm also on the podcast. And he's like, oh, we've listened to the podcast a couple times. He's like, yeah, I recognize your voice now. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, are you just saying that or do you really listen, Sean?
Yeah, Sean. That's right. Are you listening?
I'm talking to you.
Right now, Sean Miller? No. Sean Miller? Are you listening?
I'm looking at his business card right now to make sure it is.
Seth has your business card right now, Sean. He's looking at it.
It's kind of a neat business card.
Does it have an embossing?
No.
Oh.
But it's cut round on one end.
That's so cool.
So like the High Moon logo is like about a third of the card. And so the curved cut is the shape of the moon.
That's cooler than embossing.
There's the creators and the going down one edge it says highmoonstudios.com and Sean Miller game director, the address and telephone number and fax number. And his work email address, which none of those things I'm going to read right now.
But I'm sure someone out there was probably just very briefly feeling a little bit nervous.
Yeah, it's a very pale blue. It's a nice color.
Video review.
Oh, and then when you flip it over, it's black with the full moon of the High Moon Studios logo.
Oh.
And it says High Moon Studios beneath.
I believe.
Beneath.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay, well. It says Hybrid Studios, I believe.
Yeah, I thought you said believe, and I was like, that's pretty inspiring.
What if they took all the profits from War for Cybertron and put it into these fancy-ass double-sided business cards?
That's what I'd do.
Was it Ryan Davis from Giant Bomb tweeted the business card from the guy that made the... What was that game... That they did the game that they did the double endurance run on?
Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, I think it was that guy.
Oh, Swery. And he was at GDC, right?
Yeah.
I follow Swery on Twitter. He's awesome.
Right, so Ryan Davis tweeted his business card, and that was crazy.
That's because Swery is a king.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Swery is my favorite game developer on Twitter.
Yeah, this business card ain't got nothing on that. So.
That's all right. I mean, Swery's on a league above a lot of other human beings. So, You should never feel bad if you can't do it as good as Sweary does it.
The name's also Sweary.
Sweary 65, to be precise.
Which makes it sound like he's somebody that swears a lot.
And
like, you know, that guy's kind of sweary.
And on his Twitter...
You don't want to have a conversation with him in mixed company. He'll drop the F-bomb.
On Twitter, Sweary once took a picture of his injured leg and then tweeted, "I hurt my leg when I fell down the stairs." I love Sweary.
Right.
Life of a Japanese game dev.
Has he taken pictures of an abandoned bag of bagels several days in a row?
No.
Has he done that?
You still have the crown on that one. I guess. That last picture when the bag was gone was so depressing.
I was bummed out.
It's like there was a bag here coming up
to
once.
That corner. I was coming up to that corner, and I didn't see the bag from across the street. I'm like, oh, maybe it just fell down the other side of the wall. The little wall that's there, and it wasn't there. I was like, oh. Like,
what happened to it?
Somebody finally picked it up.
It
there were by Monday, there were fewer bagels than the last time I had seen it on Friday. But when I saw it on Friday, there was a crow pulling one of the bagels out of the bag. So I'm sure birds ate a lot of them.
And one of the birds was like, I could use a bag.
Yeah. I will make a nest I will suffocate in.
I can use this bag to carry the rest of the bagels. Birds are smart. So I guess unless there's anything else, we can now move into your recording, your highlights recording from the presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. Might as well. I can't really think of much else.
All right.
Except for the lobby of the hotel was packed with people with GDC badges.
Ooh. Press, man. Game journalism.
And I saw a lot of laptop computers being used. I don't think I saw a single one without a glowing Apple logo on it.
Snap.
Oh, boy. Maybe those were just given out.
A lot of MacBooks.
Maybe those were just given out at a panel.
What kind of computer is WTF at TFW edited on?
Oh, a MacBook.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, while I was walking around killing time, and I'm looking around, I'm like, damn, like, all these Apple fanboys have MacBooks. And then I went, oh, the laptop bag I'm carrying has a MacBook in it, too.
I have a protective hard shell on my MacBook that causes the light-up Apple logo to be blurred out a little bit. So it's not as obviously an Apple computer. And then when people see it, they're like, oh, hey, what's this thing? Oh, it's an Apple.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying it was interesting that I don't think I saw a single PC notebook being used.
I find that actually strange because I thought that Windows or Linux-based netbooks would be an easier thing to do text-based journalism from, unless they're all doing video content. I don't know.
Well, during the demo, the person that was sitting next to me had a tiny little netbook that he was typing his notes into.
Hmm.
And then there's a guy sitting a row ahead, and I couldn't tell what type of computer he was using.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that these are all guys who do written journalism on the web, and I know that there's a lot more people nowadays who become gaming journalists via doing lots of video content. So that could also be why they all had their MacBooks. They're like, I got to put my media package together.
I wonder how many of those guys have Steam installed on their Macs.
Probably everyone. I would be surprised if one of them didn't have Steam. You should have gone inspecting. You got Steam.
If I get to go back next year, I'll walk up to every single person I see with a MacBook.
You got Steam.
Go, man, you got Steam on that?
And if they say no, you got to confront them.
Yo, man, let me see what puzzle games you got on there, because that seems to be the only type of game that makes it to Mac Steam.
They're like, I don't got Steam on my Mac. They're like, you're at the GDC!
Yo, dog! How are you going to play Puzzle Agent?
Flash? Oh, no, you're on a Mac. You don't know what Flash is. All right. Well,
roll tape.
Yeah, let's get that thing queued up. I'll stick the cassette into the projector and start cranking the reel. And thank you for listening to our embargoed GDC 2011 discussion. Hopefully we will be able to bring you some more Dark of the Moon by High Moon Studios content in the near future. So thank you, Gog. Thank you, Seth. Thank you again, Seth, because you actually went and did all the legwork and actually all the work. You even edited this highlight clip. So
wait, what?
You did.
I thought you were going to do that.
No. In fact, by the time anyone's listening to this in the future, you'll have to, because I'm Vangelis from March 10th, 2011. This is a time paradox.
Oh, no.
Snake!
Our attack on it was a little bit different. Rather than in a typical movie game where you might see the movie and then play the movie, we wanted to do something that gave a little bit more to the backstory of the Transformers and bring a little bit more of the lore in and bridge the gap between the two films. So we've developed an original storyline. It's a single campaign where you get to play as Autobots and as Decepticons at different points during the mission, but it's a single story, a single narrative that builds to the events in the film. So, one of the most important aspects of developing a Transformer title is being a Transformer and capturing the essence of being a Transformer. And to me, part of that is about being able to understand that these guys are not robots that turn into vehicles, and they're not vehicles who suddenly turn into robot form. They are natively both robot and vehicle. So that means that those forms are natural to them, so that as a player, I should be able to move and fight and do anything else that I want to do as smoothly and as intuitively as possible. We don't want you wrestling with the controls. So we developed our controls based off of the a very popular third-person action, but we had the challenge of doing vehicle combat and robot combat. We have to marry all those things together. One of the things that really gets to serve as the glue in between those modes is something that is new to the film universe, and it's a mode called Stealth Force. You might have seen it if you saw the last NASCAR trailer, where Bumblebee, in his vehicle form, transforms out and becomes this hybrid vehicle with weapons bristling all over. It may seem a little awkward that it's called Stealth Force. Having weapons all over your vehicle doesn't sound very stealthy. The idea is that you have your stealth form. You're hiding in vehicle form. But normally, you would have had to transform all the way back to your robot form in order to use your weapons. What Stealth Force does, it lets you have almost instantaneous access to an array of weapons that you can use without going back to vehicle form. You stay in vehicle form, you bring out all these weapons, and you can very quickly put them back and zip on your way. So what that does for combat is it lets you seamlessly move in and out of whichever mode you feel is proper for the kind of combat that you're in. There are certainly areas where it makes better sense to be in your Stealth Force mode. It's sometimes you're going to want to drive really fast. Other times, you're going to have tighter confines and you're going to want to be a robot. But it's really up to you as the player to be able to choose between those things. So I want to show that by taking you through a little piece of Bumblebee. So Bumblebee's level is set in South America. And what you're going to see here is Bumblebee. You'll get to experience his driving, his stealth force, his melee, all of his different combat modes, and kind of see how they all flow together. As an experience, he has probably, at this point of development, the tightest example of that stealth force combat. So go ahead and get started in here. You'll also get to see him in his new vehicle form for the film. They've changed his design just a little bit. He's got some additional armor plating. Some of the things you'll see in your Stealth Force form is you have the ability to actually strafe in vehicle form, which is something that gives you additional mobility that is critical during a lot of the high combat modes. But you can also go into a normal vehicle mode simply by accelerating.
Remember, under acceleration, the armor in your vehicle mode offers extra protection.
So you see that both enemies as well as player characters have access to their stealth force. Some characters will be in robot form. Some will prefer their vehicle form. But it's going to change up your encounters throughout the game. You're going to have to change your tactics based on where you are, what you're doing. So the next thing I want to do is take you look. I'm going to give you a survey of just a bunch of the different types of environments that you're going to experience in the game. One of the benefits of taking the narrative approach that we've done with that prequel element is we also got to explore in depth a little bit more the levels from a single character's perspective. So we wanted to make sure that each level gave you the essence of that character. So we took a look at the personality, and we developed abilities based around that character. His objectives are based around things that would be important to that character to do and what their character's ability are. So in this level, this is Ironhide's. So Ironhide, of course, he's traditionally the weapons expert. So we developed his abilities and his firepower are all around that. He's about powerful weapons and destruction. He's sent into a human city of Detroit to try to root out a Decepticon terrorist threat. They've gone hot, they're destroying the city. He's working together with Ratchet. His special abilities, as I mentioned, they're all about weaponry and damage. Heavy Iron gives him access to additional weapons in his robot forms that are heavy weapons. So he's got a super heavy machine gun, and he's got a really powerful rocket launcher. His weapons, he gets more powerful weapons as the level progresses. He has the ability to use what we call the Grenade Blossom. He fires these energon-seeking grenades that will lock onto Transformer targets and will fire at them while Ironhide can now target multiple other characters. Let's go ahead and get in here. I'm going to take you through two different areas here. The initial area is really the city under siege. It kind of sets up the idea of where, you know, what's going on in the story. And then I'm going to jump forward to some of the combat. But we wanted to experience the epic scale of being a giant robot in a human city. So we want to make sure that we're sort of seeing you in the world that you're in. Alright, yeah, thank you.
Not accepting things by strings, Prime. Old friend, we need to earn the humans' trust again. Just do your best.
I'm trapped in a large factory surrounded by Decepticons. I don't think I can hold them off. Mixmaster is here. Repeat, Mixmaster is here.
Quickly, Ironhide. Ratchet needs your help.
So you get to see just all the different kinds of modes. You have his traditional vehicle form. I don't know if you noticed there. Ironhide, when he builds up enough steam, he can actually ram guys. So you've got, you know, the full power of 5,000 pounds of Cybertronian metal, and you really hammer on that enemies, and enemies will react to that if you're enemy or you're aiming at them, in addition to your other types of weapons that you have available. So the next thing I want to take you to is Soundwave's level. I was really excited that Soundwave was going to have a role in a new film, so I wanted to give you a chance to play as Soundwave. In the last movie, of course, he was a satellite, which, you know, was something where I really wanted to see Soundwave as a robot on Earth. In the movie, I can't talk about what he's doing in the movie. He has some interesting things that he's going to be doing there, so what we wanted to do as part of our prologue storyline, we get to explore what happened. How did he get from outer space? Why is he on Earth in the form that he has? So this is a first look at Soundwave robot. You'll notice actually the color here is different. This is from a concept of one that in-game is his color for the game. One of the aspects of being able to develop levels around characters and their personalities is we were able to take a look at Soundwave and kind of dig into the historic background of Soundwave as a master of sound and information. So his objectives are geared towards those types of things. His special abilities are an ultrasonic blast. His primary weapon is a focused beam of sound that will kill his enemies. he has an EMP stun blast that lets you kind of go for the 1-2 punch of stunning them and then laying waste with your sonic powers. He also has a stealth force form in our game, and I'm going to go ahead and have you jump in. One of the other aspects that we're really trying to capture is not only the epic scale of the robots on Earth, but also the fact that we're on Earth, and while our human structures are frail in comparison to a giant robot, we have a pretty grand world with some very solid large structures. So you're also confronted with the epic scale of our world, ancient jungles and mountainscapes, embracing the things that make our world special. So there's certain elements and objectives where Soundwave has to use his special abilities to destroy parts of the base and achieve information in others. The facility is actually it's a place where the Autobots have been working with the humans to develop special weaponry and to specifically fight against Transformers in a war against the Decepticons. So the next area is another fan favorite in Starscream. Starscream offers us the opportunity to explore another completely different type of gameplay. As a flying character, we could craft a level that's entirely around his ability to fly. You will play through sections of it where you can transform into robot and for vehicle. The section I'm going to show you here is a jet section. He's got a dogfight where he's fighting against some aerial bots. There's also an introduction to a boss character that is a giant a cargo plane that you may have seen in the previous films as the cargo jet that's been transferring the Nest soldiers and the Autobots. Well, he's actually a Transformer named Stratosphere. And he's been outfitted with the Stealth Force technology, so this is this huge battle in the sky. So we'll go ahead and jump in here. You can sort of see the familiar flight controls together with your ability to transform.
We'll handle this, Stratosphere. Good hunting. Let's take this to the next level. Stealth Force, engage!
Ooh, my transistors are trending.
Starscream, it's just you, me, and the whooping I'm about to give you. I'm not impressed.
So there's elements of the battle where you can actually, he's such a huge transforming boss, you can actually land on him in this portion of the battle where you're fighting right on the back of Stratosphere as part of the battle. It's pretty fun. The next section I want to take you to is Megatron's level. So you get to play as Megatron, and one of the things we got to explore is how Megatron gets from his Transformer 2 destroyed state into the form that he takes in the new film. So you will see in the new film he does have a different form. Unfortunately, I can't show it to you. I don't want to spoil anything for Michael Bay. But I will talk about that. We are going to show that transition because you don't get to see that transition in the movie. You're going to get to experience it as part of the play. With Megatron's level, we designed his abilities and gameplay around the things that help him with his transition into the new film. So at the end of the last film, you might remember, he got half of his face blown off, his right arm was blown off, and he limps away with Starscream. Our game has him partially restored. He's beginning to get healed. He's already reconstructed a new right arm for himself, and Starscream has outfitted him with some equipment to help him. He has a technology that allows him to actually drain Energon, which is the life force of the other Transformers, to replenish his own and help with his healing process. The Energon Disperser is something pulled from Transformers lore. You remember in the second film there were the Hatchlings, which were the sort of insect-like Transformer characters that he was breeding to help fill out his army. Well, they're back in the new film. And in our game, he's able to use this Energon Disperser to deploy a super-powered Energon that feeds these things and sends them into a frenzy, and they'll attack any creatures or any objects that are touched with this this substance. So I want to go ahead and head in. I'm going to show you a couple minutes from Megatron's level here. The idea here is Megatron's in this Siberian base, and the Autobots have tracked him to his lair, and there are hordes. You're fighting off hordes of the Autobots as they're attempting to overthrow him.
Direct me to the cryo chamber.
Send the coordinates. Drive through the tunnels near the dry docks.
All right. So there's Megatron. There's one other thing I'd like to share with you. Can we show the?
Yeah, we didn't get there, so okay. You got to keep it really quick.
All right, because we have one extra element that one of the neat things about doing a prequel storyline is we get to introduce some of the new characters for the week. And when I heard that the new character, the next character was going to be in the film, I really wanted to have him be a playable character, somebody that you could play in the game. So if you're familiar with the Transformers lore, you know that Soundwave has his minions. Last film, of course, they had Ravage. In this one, they brought in Laserbeak. And his design is actually really cool. I really love the way they captured that his sort of bird-like aspect. It's a really, really neat treatment of it. So in our game, you get to play a little bit as Laserbeak. One of the interesting things about it is that we're taking it back to the Soundwave, because just like in the series, you get to play as both Soundwave and as Laserbeak in the same level because you're working together. Laserbeak has certain things that you have to do as Laserbeak so that Soundwave can do some of the things that he does. You'll set up certain objectives for Soundwave so he can come through and either locate or destroy certain elements. I don't want to give away too much, so we're just going to show just a quick sneak peek at him. It's also a completely different flying experience. It gave us a way for you to have another flying experience that's completely different from Starscream's. In the movie, Laserbeak is a pretty tough little character. I really like what they're doing with him. So hopefully you guys will find him as much fun as I do in the game. One of the things that it also gives us to do, the Transformers licenses so many different scales. Every robot has a different design. Every robot has a different personality and abilities. They also have different scales. So here you're playing as one of the smallest Transformers, and then you're also going to be experiencing some of the same spaces as the larger Transformer. And you also get to go places that Soundwave can't go because you're smaller than them. There's a few other neat surprises that you'll see when we release the game. Well, thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate you guys giving me the time today.
In fact, by the time anyone's listening to this in the future, you'll have to, because I am Vangelis from March 10th, 2011. This is a time paradox.
Oh, no!
Snake! I'm a wavy, wibbly, wobbly.
The Doctor Who music.
I know.
Someone shot Ocelot in the past.
Was it Alternity Starscream?
Raiden! You've caused a time paradox!
It wasn't Raiden, it was Snake. Did you do that on purpose, or did you know that you can actually do that in the game?
I saw a video about it.
Okay.
Why are we still talking?
Are we still recording?
I am. No. I'm going to stop.
Okay, I'm going to stop too.
this thing.